Hello and welcome to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. No, don't adjust your audio podcast set. We are here, but you haven't got Ewan this week. He's winging his way to Eurovision. No doubt we'll be hearing more about that in future episodes. So you're going to have to put up with the rest of the team and not have Ewan's unique contributions. So welcome. It's Rafe Blanford here, and I'm joined in Reading
by Steve Litchfield. Hello, everyone.
And up in Hull,
David Gilson. Hello, everybody. Pleasure to be here.
So with that introduction, I'm actually going to hand over to Steve to do the rest of the chairing of this podcast, because everyone knows how much I like talking, and being a chairman would just give me an excuse to talk even more. So over to you, Steve.
Well, we just should get a few news items out of the way, really, and analyse. The Samsung Focus 2 has been announced. This is basically a device for America. Samsung Focus 1, of course, was originally. This is not really cosmetically much of a difference. The basic difference is now got LTE, which is the new sort of next generation, fourth generation data network. And it's also got a slightly faster processor, 1.4 gig rather than a 1 gigahertz processor. But no big real innovations, Rafe. Now, Nokia came on stream with their polycarbonate unibody designs, and people said, yeah, this is innovative, this is new. I mean, HTC with their Titan 2 at least came up with a really, really interesting high-spec camera. But there's, apart from LTE, there's absolutely nothing of interest for this Focus 2 at all.
Yeah, that's right. It does feel like Samsung's sort of treading water a bit. I mean, they've had the Focus S and the Focus Flash as well. And obviously, this is a Generation 2 device, and the original Focus was Generation 1, which is why you've got that bump in RAM, or rather, sorry, in processor. But you look at it, the device, and otherwise it's pretty disappointing. You know, 5-megapixel camera, 8 gigabytes of onboard memory. It is priced as such, so AT&T are going to have this for $50 on a 2-year contract, which of course does undercut the Lumia 900 by $50 and the Titan 2 by $150. But I can't help but feel that if you've got the device in front of you, almost everyone is going to be willing to pay $50 extra to get the Lumia 900. You get that, you know, very effective polycarbonate design, but you also get the bump in the memory on board, 16 gigabytes, and a better camera. So I think this is really Samsung, you know, doing Windows Phone by the numbers, if you like. They've been asked for something by AT&T to kind of complete their portfolio. And so they've now got, you know, a cheap LTE device, a moderately priced LTE device, and a, you know, high cost LTE device. But of those, I think the Lumia 900 still represents the best value for money. But I suppose we shouldn't sort of put our nose up at it completely. It's good to see AT&T supporting Windows Phone like this, but I don't really expect to see this handset coming out anywhere else, really. This is very much something that's come about as a result of operator requests and requirements.
Yeah, of course, we should, putting our positive spin on it, recognize this is the 4-inch Super AMOLED display, which is basically, I reckon, a bit of a sweet spot. We've talked in other podcasts, Rafe and David, about the different form factors, the different screen sizes, and where the sweet spot is. An awful lot of people reckon the 4-inch display, as featured on the original Galaxy S running Android. And of course, David, you've got the Nexus S also running Android, which is basically an identical form factor to this. And yes, it's a bit of a sweet spot, and definitely shouldn't dismiss this Samsung Focus 2.
Definitely. I'm usually skeptical around it, if anything, 4 inches and above, but the Nexus S is definitely comfortable, and my thumb can cover that. So I would be happy to try this one out as well.
Okay. And the Lumia 900 is making its way to me, hopefully tomorrow, if Rafe gets to the post office, which means I can start part two of our Lumia 900 review. And of course, that's got a 4.3-inch screen as well, so just slightly bigger, and I'll be interested to play with that. Also announced at CTIA, happening over in America land this week, Nokia has announced a number of Lumia exclusives. This is games and applications. David, do you want to go through these?
Yeah, sure. The games on offer, we've got a PGA Tour, which is very popular, and I can guess you'll be doing a review of that.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And EA has said they'll do a number of exclusive games. And also, I think the one which I will probably take if Ewan doesn't take it first is Angry Birds in Space. And other titles, more serious ones, there's ESPN Sports News, which we've already reviewed if you search for it on allaboutwindowsphone.com. There's a Box app, which is one of the newer cloud storage systems. There are already a number of third-party versions for that. Groupon, which has been popular, although if you're reading the tech news, its shares are down at the moment. PayPal, which I'm very happy about, and I think that is a crucial app to have on the platform for people who run small businesses. And we've got TripDots, which is a travel organizer, I think, the AOL Entertainment Hub, Time Magazine, and Newsweek's The Daily Beast.
Some of these apps are just exclusive to Nokia for a number of months, then they'll be available to the wider Windows Phone community, and some of them indeed are available from day one for the wider community. I should just note that having just seen the name PGA Tour, I thought, oh, it's a game. It's, you know, it's the Windows Phone version of PGA Tour Golf. But no, apparently it's a news application, David. So I will still cover it, but I'm not quite so as excited as I was 2 minutes ago. Rafe, anything in this particular list catch your eye?
Well, actually, it was some of the exclusive information that caught my eye. It's Nokia taking a three-pronged approach. Some applications are exclusive to them altogether. Some of them are exclusive for a limited period of time. I mean, be that 3 months or 12 months. And ESPN, for example, seems to have had that extended. And the other interesting thing is that they're actually doing versions of apps with additional features that are exclusive to Lumia. They've actually already released one of these this week. It's not referred to in this release, but it's Caddy and Caddy Plus, and sort of adding extra features so you get an improved user experience on Nokia, which is quite an interesting approach. Obviously, all the headlines are going to be written about Angry Bird Space, and they're saying that's going to arrive as quickly as possible, and they're also saying that Rovio's future titles, and they've already promised some more Angry Birds titles for later in the year, will also be on the way. But actually, the ones that kind of caught my eye was the PGA Tour, because that's going to be it's kind of a third screen app, in that it's intended to kind of give you an immersive or extra experience when you're watching golf. And either you can do it in the app, or maybe have it as a companion when you're watching it on the TV. So things like hole by hole coverage, even some augmented reality stuff for some of the golf courses. It's a bit like the World Rally Championship app that Nokia's had, both on Windows Phone and its Symbian platform, that kind of gives you live position information and timing and all that sort of thing. So I think those kind of apps are really the future of these kind of event-based apps, when you're kind of adding to the experience of watching the event by providing, you know, additional detailed information. I suppose the other one that just caught my eye was Time and Newsweek, just because these are big brands. And what Nokia seems to be doing with this is being able to attract the big brands, because people are suddenly taking it seriously. And really the question in my mind is, you know, would these companies have been doing Windows Phone apps otherwise? And I think the answer to that is pretty obviously no, they wouldn't.
I want to like the idea of exclusives, but whenever I think it through, there's really little good comes of it. I mean, on one hand, there is this sort of slightly ugly human nature that goes that, oh, well, look what I've got that you can't have. and people like to be able to do that. However, if you're going to have that sort of conversation between different users, how many conversations are you going to have between Windows Phone users? Because Windows Phone is very small. So I don't think this isn't going to help convert Samsung or HTC Windows Phone users into Nokia users, because there just isn't enough people for that network effect to happen. So if you are comparing, you're going to be comparing someone who's got an Android or an iPhone. And a lot of these exclusive applications are already on all the different platforms out there. And I think really there's a saying of a rising tide floats all. And I do really think that if these applications were on Windows Phone 7 as a whole, it would help raise the profile.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there, David. Although I would say, I suspect, you know, these kind of applications, it's far less about, you know, attracting from other Windows Phone manufacturers and just attracting users in general. And the exclusivity is kind of a bonus that comes along with it. And, you know, if Nokia is paying for the development, they want to preserve that advantage in some ways. And I don't see anything wrong with making Nokia, you know, the best Windows Phone device to buy because it's got some extra apps available for it. You know, it's far better than not having those apps available at all. And you're right, you know, the comparison is going to be made with other platforms. I think everyone's well aware Windows Phone has a smaller app catalogue on which to draw. In one sense, having a manufacturer embracing third-party apps and doing co-marketing around them, you know, we've seen that particularly on the iPhone, less so I think in the Android world. So I think Nokia's pattern is probably the right idea here, and it'll be interesting to see how much marketing we see associated with some, especially with some of these bigger name apps, you know, once they actually become available. And we should say that the timeline on these varies for, you know, June right up until, you know, a couple of months later, but we should have most of these apps by the end of the summer.
So really, with a cynical eye on all this, should we actually say that exclusives are okay as long as it's only Nokia? Because it really, with the way Microsoft are looking at this, wouldn't really mind if HTC and Samsung went away because Nokia is the Windows Phone manufacturer.
I think that might be a slightly too cynical way to look at it. I mean, it's the halo effect. But yes, I suspect, you know, Microsoft is far more concerned about how Nokia does, given that they're kind of putting all their chips in the one basket, where someone like Samsung has obviously got the major part of its attention in Android. And I think the same really is true of HTC. I mean, it does have a little bit more game in Windows Phone. In terms of, you know, the platform question, yes, I think exclusives are okay if Nokia does them. But I think it's kind of an inevitable part of this business development process with apps. You're always going to get some period of exclusivity. And, you know, it's important not to get hung up on one or two applications. You know, it's always going to be the pattern as a whole that matters. So I think some of this exclusivity is, it's more kind of a marketing and a communications game, in that they're saying, oh, this app is coming to the Nokia devices. And for most users, it's not going to be that big a deal, because if there's a 3-month period when they can't get it, most of the time it's not going to be life altering or anything like that. And so waiting that bit of time for it to become available more generally is fine. And I guess we probably shouldn't pretend otherwise, that for those that are really desperate to get a particular app, there are ways around this. And we've already seen it happen to, you know, Nokia Maps and Nokia Drive becoming available on other Windows Phone devices. And if there's something really popular, I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen again.
Talking of Nokia injecting ideas into the Windows Phone software scene, there's a new app out, this is worth talking about, called Nokia Mug Me. Basically, you go around the city holding out this your smartphone, running this application, looking for information around you and asking people to mug you and run off with your expensive device. No, it's really called Nokia City Lens. The idea is you wander around a city, and quite a few cities are supported, and there's three different modes, which Rafe can explain more in a moment. It basically gives you places of interest, shops, restaurants, hotels, museums, and more around your current location. But the most innovative thing, Rafe, is that the actual information displayed depends entirely on how you hold the phone. Do you want to explain?
That's right. I mean, there's been these augmented reality applications around for a while, and I was a bit sceptical when I first heard about this. And as Steve said, that it is sort of the Mug Me mode of phone operation. I think that may be a slightly too cynical view. Maybe Steve got out of bed the wrong side this morning. But yes, what happens if you hold up the phone sort of in front of you in landscape orientation, you get this augmented reality view. In other words, you're getting a live view from the camera, and icons are overlaid on the top, you know, showing you what the nearest shop is or whatever. Works best in an urban environment, kind of for obvious reasons. It's the density of information. But it'll work in rural areas. It's not actually restricted to anywhere else. And so, for example, where I am, the nearest thing is a couple of kilometres away. But it does things out to about 8 kilometers. But of course the issue with that is it's not always a very user-friendly way to sort of get an overview of information. So when you tip the phone down and point it towards the ground, as you kind of would if you were just looking down at the phone normally, it will switch into a map mode. So effectively you get a bird's eye overview with, you know, icons for each of the places showing where they are. And you can tap on those icons and bring up the place, just as you can in the augmented reality view. You bring up a place page, and that shows you information about the place, opening times or address, contact number for a restaurant, plus reviews where they're available and user photos. And you can also get directions, and that's actually all tied in via Nokia Maps. So it's either driving or walking directions. And then the final sort of view mode, if you like, in city mode, is holding the phone in the traditional portrait orientation, and it doesn't matter up or down or whatever, and it will show the list of nearby places in a list format that you can just scroll through, and it's sorted by distance. So actually it kind of provides a one-stop shop for finding places that are nearby you. Obviously this functionality is already built into Windows Phone with something like Local Scout, but I think the advantage of City Lens is it's a much more pleasant user experience to use. And even if you don't use the augmented reality view at all, the other two views, you know, also work well and link into the sort of place pages. So for me, this is actually one of the more realistic sort of AR tools that I've actually seen. And I can actually think, yeah, I would use this out in the real world, both for sort of identifying places, but more to the point, you know, I just want to see what's around me quickly and what's an interesting thing to go and visit, or where are nearest to a certain type of shop is, or nearby restaurants. So I'm sort of a bit more optimistic about people actually using this tool than I think Steve was in his Mug Me mode.
Okay. Back to Rafe, I'm afraid, for more, because it's the Nokia Lumia 900. And sorry to stay on Nokia, but the retail unit, the UK retail unit, has just arrived at Shea Blandford. So any initial impressions, Rafe?
Yes, it's not much different to the US version, which we've talked about a little bit in the previous podcast.
What exactly is different? Do tell.
It's basically down to the radios inside it. Rather than having LTE, it's kind of got HSDPA plus. It's kind of a version of 3.5G to kind of use a proper designation, not 4G as AT&T would have you believe in the States. So it's basically faster 3G speeds than the original Lumia 800. Having said that, not many operators actually support the full speed yet. And so effectively, you're just going to be getting, you know, HSDPA speeds on it. On some networks, you'll get even faster HSDPA speeds. But other than that, it's pretty much identical. The nice thing is with the global version is you're not getting so AT&T branding on it. So it's just a pure Nokia branding. And they do pre-install some extra applications, things like Nokia Maps and Nokia Drive and Nokia Music, for example. The one other thing I've noticed that I think is worth mentioning is because it's got the same bigger battery as its US cousin, actually this is probably the best in terms of battery life of the Nokia Windows Phone devices, because it's not using LTE, which does tend to suck down the battery a bit. So I think actually this global variant of the 900 will be good for those who are looking to get particularly good battery performance out of their device. And other than that, so it's pretty much the same. We're going to be talking about it more on the site and doing some comparisons with the Lumia 800. I think the big difference there is, of course, the screen, but there are some minor design considerations as well. And it is running a slightly more recent version of the Windows Phone software. We're expecting that to arrive on the other Windows Phone devices in due course, but that's things like being able to attach videos in MMS messages, also internet tethering in the form of turning your phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot. But again, we'll have more of that in the next few days on the site.
Is it a Pentile display like as on the Lumia 800?
Or that's one of the differences that is worth talking about. Yes, it's not a Pentile display. It's sort of a full AMOLED display. And so you don't get that sub-pixel blurring. It really depends on the individual whether you notice that sort of thing. I can't say I've ever been particularly bothered by it on the Lumia 800. But for those of you that do care about such things, the Lumia 900 is not a Pentile display.
Lovely. Okay. On the site allaboutwindowsphone.com, over the last week or so, one feature I was particularly proud of and spent quite a bit of time researching it and putting it together was my top 20 Windows Phone tips and tricks, basically things I myself did not know. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. And I'll just pick out a few of them here, and then maybe you guys can each pick out one of your favorites that I don't already mention here. Just five things very quickly. One, calculator. Go into calculator on your Windows Phone. If you're listening to this, do it now. Go into calculator. Turn the phone to one side. You get a different calculator. It's scientific. Turn it the other way, i.e. through 180 degrees. Oh, you've got hexadecimal. All of this is built in from day one. No need to go searching out third-party software whatsoever, which I think is pretty darn cool. The second one I want to mention, this is lightning-fast alphabetic jumping. Now, in any of the places where you've got letter blocks, for example, in the People Hub, so you've got all the Bs, all the Cs, all the Ds in your contacts, there's a little square letter, a highlight at the start of each block. Tap on that letter and you get shown an alphabetic grid, and just tapping any of the letters in that grid goes straight to that block. So if you're trying to find someone who's called Zoe, for example, rather than have to go swipe, 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 swipe over and over again, because I've got over 900 contacts, I can just tap on any letter, brings up the grid, tap on the Z, job done. Very, very swish indeed. So I wanted to mention Reinstaller. We have mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast. A really useful application to just know about, so that if ever you have to hard reset your device and reinstall your apps, again, look for Reinstaller in the market. Just saves so much time, and I've already made use of it once. Film strip photos. This has really caught me by surprise. Go into your pictures hub and just turn your phone into landscape mode. So you're just, you know, swiping between photographs. Now pinch in, like, you know, splay your fingers in, and you see all your photos then go to about half size into a film strip mode, and you can just swipe really, really fast. So rather than to go to 100 photographs, have to do them one by one, you can now three or four fast flicks and you're through all 100 photographs. very, very quick way of navigating around. And finally, just the most very personal tip, exactly how much battery life do I have left? It's all very well having a little icon at the top of the screen. But in my case, people, regular listeners may know that my particular Lumia 800 is completely screwed and that all I get is a question mark at the top of the screen. However I do it, however much I reset it and rebuild it, I just get a question mark. But anybody can do this. Go into settings and have a look on the tap on battery saver. And down at the bottom of the screen, if you scroll down, it says remaining battery life in percent, a fairly accurate reading, a fairly accurate estimate. So at last, I know how much battery life I've got on my Lumia. And if you've got a similar problem with battery life or you want to know really exactly on your Windows Phone device, then do look at that setting. Settings, battery saver, remaining battery life. David, which particular tip caught your eye out of the 20?
The one that I really like is not needing cursor keys, where you can just hold down your thumb or finger on while typing, and after a little while, a free-floating cursor will appear, which you can actually drag into place. Because I really miss having the left and right cursor keys on Symbian, and I've always missed having the trackball from the Nexus One. So having this on Windows Phone really is a convincing replacement to that. And actually, that is one that I did know about myself. I had discovered that myself. But one thing that I hadn't discovered was actually highlighting a word in the Internet Explorer and pressing the search button and instantly doing a Bing search on the highlighted term.
Lovely. Rafe, any particular one that we haven't mentioned so far?
Well, having had David steal them, I'm going to have to go for a different one, and that's about accents and extra punctuation. I think this was mentioned as number 4 on your 20 list. And this is the idea that if you hold down a long tap on things like the S key and also some other keys like A and E, or indeed the full stop key, you'll get a little pop-up with some extra characters, and that's quicker than, for me, swapping to the other keyboards. So, for example, if you hold down the full stop key, which I'm doing right now on this device, you hold it down and you get a hyphen, an exclamation mark, a colon, a question mark, and of course full stop. And that means you can access all the most common punctuation without having to switch off the main alphanumeric keyboard. So yes, very useful tip, that one.
Okay. Coming up on the site, and we've already had one review part on our continuing review of the Nokia Lumia 800 in extraordinary detail. We've had hardware, we've had camera parts, we've had two camera parts. We've now had David's first software review part, looking in detail at Windows Phone 7.5 on the Lumia 800, and of course that much of that applies to generic Windows phones as well. David, do you want to just trail what's coming out? What's in the next part? What's in part 4?
Part 4 is the Office Hub and file management, and in that I'm looking in detail at what you can do with all of the built-in Office applications, and I'm looking at how you can or can't manage files on the Windows Phone 7 Mango platform. And I just think it's an interesting thing to bring up about the cloud dependency for documents, because as we know, Windows Phone 7 doesn't have a file system as far as users are concerned, and we have to use Zune for syncing our media. But that doesn't cover getting documents onto our device. Instead, all the documents are on the cloud. Everyone who uses a Windows Phone device automatically has a SkyDrive account, which gives you 7 gigabytes or 25 gigabytes if you're grandfathered in, which is plenty for syncing documents. And now with a desktop application, that will sync with your PC, just like Dropbox would. But the Office Hub itself, the user interface on that, isn't a great file manager. But thankfully, version 2 of the SkyDrive app on Windows Phone has become a really great file manager. So it's almost as if you can manage your files on Windows Phone now, as long as you have an internet connection. However, SkyDrive isn't the only online document management system that Windows Phone can connect to. There's SharePoint, which is a host-your-own solution for documents and web development in an enterprise environment. And there's another one as well. There's Office 365, which is, I think Microsoft put that in as a little branding exercise, and you can connect to your Office 365 account. And that goes further. It includes SharePoint, Exchange, which is email and PIM, and Microsoft Link. Link support isn't built into Windows Phone, but there is an app you can get for it, just like there is for SkyDrive. None of them seem to hook into your built-in live account, but you have to log into them separately. Riff, I believe you've used Office 365, right?
Yeah, Office 365 is really just a branding for a Surface that kind of incorporates many of the server-side pieces, and rather than having to host them within your own IT infrastructure in a company, it's kind of hosted by Microsoft, and you can sign up on a subscription basis for using. You can do this as a small business use for just one person or up to about 25 users, and then there are options going on from that as well. As you say, you do get a mention of Office 365 in the Office Hub, and it is kind of a branding exercise because all it really is another way to enter the kind of SharePoint details. And if you're using Office 365 elsewhere on the phone, it's just like any other Exchange account. You know, you enter in the email and the password, and it should do all the setup for you. And in the case of Link, you sort of download that application, again, enter your corporate ID and the password, and it will set up all that for you. You know, pull down the address book, etc., etc. But I do think you're right. It's actually worth highlighting this because people have complained about the absence of file managers, etc., coming from Symbian devices in particular. And, you know, I was certainly in this camp because I like the flexibility. And while, you know, the need for always-on connectivity to use SkyDrive is obviously a big caveat, I suspect for a lot of people who kind of do this thing, it may well be enough, and it's sort of not a reason not to switch over to Windows Phone. And actually, there's a lot to be said for having it, you know, stored in the cloud and the ability to then get at it from your PC very easily. And all the document sync solutions I've tried for mobile devices over the years, having it in the cloud and then built in to the Office Hub, which itself, you know, is actually a pretty big feature plus point for Windows Phone, I think works really well. And I've, you know, had many occasions now where I've been working on a document, it's on my SkyDrive, and especially now that desktop sync that we were talking about a few weeks ago has come in, it's very easy to save it up to SkyDrive and be able to look at it or work on it again on the phone. And I always used to be a little bit of a cynic about, you know, doing any amount of document editing on your phone just because of the, you know, confined screen space and text entry. But I did actually find myself sitting on the train the other day doing a bit of work on a document. It wasn't very much. It was just a few sentences before emailing it back to someone else. But I think that kind of user experience has been much improved. And of course, if you're using a device with a full physical keyboard, maybe it becomes a bit more practical. But it is worth highlighting. And I think people could be a bit more giving praise about that particular feature set.
Okay. I can just, by the way, imagine Ewan jetting off on his Eurovision adventure, listening back to this podcast on his headphones and tearing his hair out at the job we're all doing. But I hope you're enjoying this listening at home. Just to move on to our regular application of the week section, I just wanted to stick up for the Microsoft's own YouTube application, which in itself is nothing more than a shortcut to the mobile YouTube site. But we just should bear in mind here that Google own YouTube. Google love changing everything. If you're a Gmail user, for example, in other worlds and other hats on, you'll know that they change the interface, they change where everything is, they change the look of the toolbar willy-nilly without telling anyone, and it's never the same 2 weeks running. And the same kind of applies to the main YouTube site and also to the mobile YouTube site. It's forever changing. I'm back to a story for our companion Symbian site about how the mobile version of YouTube there works much better because they've changed something. And so Microsoft's solution for a YouTube app for Windows Phone, to just rather than do a full client into something which they haven't really got full access to, they simply link to the mobile YouTube site. And you know what? It works pretty darn well. It's slightly slower than a client. It's slightly clunky than a client, but it's guaranteed to work. You're getting any last-minute changes and quality improvements on Google's end without having to do anything on your phone. And you should bear in mind that even if you are using a YouTube client that you've got from the Windows Phone Marketplace, the chances are that client's using unofficial APIs anyway. And at any given moment, YouTube might change something on their servers and the client might start working. So whatever you do, make sure you've got Microsoft's own shortcut YouTube application there, or simply just, you know, mark it as a favorite in your Internet Explorer on Windows Phone. And either way, you'll be covered because you'll get the very latest changes and the highest quality streams. And, well, I've been enjoying it anyway. David, what's your app of the week?
Yes, my app is Cool Tools, and it's been around for a while in the Windows Phone space. It's a free app. It's got quite a few things built in. It's got a stopwatch, a triple countdown, a countdown timer, a flashlight, which is a bit of a cheat. It doesn't access the LED. It just makes your screen go white, but that's better than nothing. It's got an on-screen ruler, an accelerometer, which isn't as nice as something that would, say, have a spirit level mimicking user interface, but it does tell you about the phone's orientation in space. It's got a sound check system, and it's got a unit converter, and it's got a tip calculator and a random number generator. So not all of the components of it are particularly pretty, and it is something of a jack of all trades and a master of none, but it is handy to have these things around.
Okay, is it free?
Yes, it is a free app, yeah.
Lovely. Okay, Rafe, Twabbit. What on earth is Twabbit about?
Well, despite what you might think, Steve, this is a completely harmless application. It's another Twitter application. There's quite a few of these available for Windows Phone. But this one caught my eye because it's the performance of it's pretty good. It loads up quickly and it's quick at loading a tweet timeline. But it's also very configurable in terms of customizing how it works. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you tap on a tweet, you can specify what it does, whether it's going into details screen or doing a reply or a retweet. And there's also actions for multi-tap and also if you shake the phone. So I really like the kind of the configurability application. And of course it's got a great name as well. I mean, who doesn't like rabbits?
If you shake the phone, why, what happens if you shake the phone?
So for example, if you shake the phone on the timeline screen, you can set it to refresh, and so it will load in any new tweets that have happened. And I just think that extra, you know, bit of interaction, you know, because of course there's only so many ways you can interact with a phone. You can tap on it, you can, you know, draw swirls on it, you can double tap on it. So, you know, having an extra thing, it just saves having to press an extra button. And so, you know, if you're willing to learn these extra gestures, you can actually get things done faster. And so I think for the power Twitter user, any of those kind of shortcuts are going to be welcome. I mean,
I'm not sorry, for everyone. I think it's just crazy talk. Now, I got fed up with the navigation applications having to sort of twirl around holding my phone above my head in a figure of eight while people around me just think, you are absolutely mad. What on earth are you doing, you prat? And now we've got people just sitting there in a cafe using a Twitter app, and all of a sudden they just pick up their phone and they just shake it vigorously in midair. I mean, this is just, we're mad.
Well, I think it really depends on how you shake it. I will point out that actually the shaking action really just requires a slight left-right motion. It's nothing quite as dramatic as Steve is suggesting. So I actually do like this idea. But the good thing is it's totally user configurable. So if you don't want it to happen, you can turn it off and never use it. The other thing is, you know, it's using the typical Windows Phone UI. So using different text sizes, colors and emphasis, you know, no Chrome. And so I actually think it looks pretty good as well. I've downloaded this. It costs 79p. But the free version is ad-supported and has no restriction, is fully featured. So if you're happy to have ads, you can have it at absolutely no cost at all. And it's available from the Windows Phone Marketplace.
When we get to every mobile platform having 250 Twitter clients, do you think someone will just say, OK, I think that's enough, we're done?
Quite possibly. But I think there's always space for something a bit different. Everyone, you know, wants a slightly different implementation. There's not really much I can say to that, Steve. If you're determined to be cynical about Twitter applications, there's not a lot I can do.
Well, you've already established I've got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. Is Twabbit AMOLED friendly? Does it run with a black theme?
It does run with a black theme. In fact, it respects your phone theme. So if you've got it set to white, it will use white and it will use the highlight colours appropriately as well. So another reason I think it's been quite nicely implemented.
Sounds like something the All About Windows Phone application should do, Rafe.
Well, it should do, and if you just wait a few weeks, it will do it. So watch out for that update coming soon.
It's AAWP in the Windows Phone Marketplace, if you haven't grabbed it already. I think we're out of time, guys. So we've got no Ewan to pick his brains on his app of the week, so we wish him bon voyage and off in his two-week adventure at Eurovision. But we're assured he does have connectivity, so you will be seeing hopefully some editorial material from him, and hopefully he'll be on a podcast live from a very noisy Eurovision press room. But in the meantime, I think we'll say goodbye from Rafe in Sussex.
Goodbye, everyone. If you want to keep track of Ewan, you can do that at escinsight.com. He's going to be in Baku for the Eurovision content song contest.
Okay, and a goodbye up in hell from David.
Yeah, goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening. And you can also follow Ewan by just Ewan at Twitter.
Well, we're plugging Ewan's stuff and not our own. Do follow All About Windows Phone on Twitter at AA_WP. And of course, we've also got presence on the web, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Insight Podcast. Normal service may or may not be resumed next week. Bye for now.